To God program. We had severe technical we had some difficulties last night with two things. First of all, the broadcast, and for everybody who wrote in, like, where is the podcast? Well, that's the reason there was no podcast, and we deeply apologize. We're going to refund as many quarters as people want refunded. But remember, this is a two-bit radio program. But not to make light of it. No, we had some severe technical difficulties, and then this afternoon we have tornadoes come through here. So it looked like it was going to be a twofer, but we're here. Hello, welcome to the program. I got a lot of emails. Greg in Florida, so I'm not sure who to email about this. You probably had several. The 1129 podcast is blank. Thanks, Greg, and everybody who wrote. The major difficulty we got from our webmaster, the server at the server that we use crashed and caused an error. George writes, I'm checking to see if Ben at White Rose saved it, but I think he had the same issue. I'm very sorry about this, but it seems it was a network attack, and I'm getting more info as the day goes on. If you get any calls, let me know. So that's what happened. But we're back. Thank God this is a two-bit radio program. I mean, if we were big time, whew, the first hour tonight is sponsored by, we need a fanfare when we do this, Kathy. Bob in Henderson, Nevada, who sends a little message. Bob says, tell all truth seekers to buy sponsorships. Let's sell out the whole next year so you and Kathy can relax. So this hour brought to you by Bob in Henderson, Nevada. Thank you, Bob. Thank you very much. Yesterday, at ProPublica's website, with federal benefits set to expire, unemployed workers face shrinking safety net. This was yesterday. The point of Marianne Wong's article was, unless Congress acts to extend the programs for those of exhausted, rare, or state unemployment benefits, millions of jobless workers may soon be phased out of emergency unemployment benefits. Now, as you may or may not know, unemployment benefits from states typically last for 26 weeks. But since 2008, Congress has on four occasions passed emergency provisions that use federal funds to extend benefits for jobless workers up to 73 weeks, depending on the state's laws and unemployment rate. These benefits are set to expire tonight. Tonight. Midnight tonight. Unless the lawmakers intervene. According to TheHill.com, a year-long extension of federal unemployment benefits, which the Obama administration supports, would cost an estimated $65 billion. A New York Times editorial over the weekend noted that this would be a far smaller blow to the deficit than extending George W. Bush's tax cuts for those already making more than $250,000 annually, but never mind. Not extending federal unemployment insurance would cause 2 million unemployed workers to be cut off from federal unemployment benefits by the end of the year. And as ProPublica has reported, federal funds are going to the states regardless. According to a congressional report released last week, more than 40% of jobless workers have been unemployed for at least 27 weeks. Do you get that? Almost half of everybody who is unemployed has been unemployed for at least 27 weeks. longer than the 26 weeks worth of benefits that some states are still borrowing money to cover. Failure to extend the federal benefits, according to the Bipartisan Joint Economic Committee, would result in spending more on other programs like disability insurance, assistance to needy families, and food stamps. Every dollar that goes through the unemployment system into the hands of workers results in, I think, $3 into the turnover in the economy. Now, that was yesterday. Here's today. Senate fails to pass unemployment benefits extension. Of course, they're fighting like crazy to extend the tax breaks for the ultra-wealthy. Now, was this on the news? I don't know. I didn't see a lot of news today. Was it on the news that the Senate failed to pass this? Was it on the news? So, it was reported today that, as expected, federal unemployment benefits will lapse at midnight. That's about, here in the East, about, what, less than 3 hours. And that's following the Senate's failure today, or this evening, to pass this one-year extension. Senator Jack Reed, a Democrat of Rhode Island, called on lawmakers to, quote, swiftly pass this one-year extension, end quote, but the measure didn't have the support of Senate Republicans and some Democrats who argue the measure should be offset with other funds. Oh, yes, indeed. Senator Scott Brown, you know him, the teabagger from Massachusetts, he was not in favor of this bill. He bitched a bit at the Democrats for waiting until the last minute to try to pass the multi-billion dollar measure that isn't paid for and would add to the deficit. In response to that scolding of Democrats, Senator Reid said, "It's unfortunate we cannot move this bill. We will try again." I don't know how to put it. I mean, I'm speechless. I'm dumbfounded. Unemployment benefits. I hate to drag in the great Christian holiday, but it's not the Christian holiday anymore. It has nothing to do with Christianity and everything to do with commerce. So based on that, it is 3 weeks before the great commerce holiday, where all the little children wait for the great commerce elf to bring things that were made in China. Now those things made in China will not be brought to the children of America. So the great commerce elf will be seen as a fraud, not to mention the parents. I don't understand how people could, in the Senate, could cut off the dreams of children in this country by denying them a visit from the great commerce elf. I don't get it. After this unemployment extension's expiration today, tonight, more than 800,000 people will see their unemployment checks evaporate by the end of next week. And that number will increase to 2 million by the end of December. Max Baucus, along with economists in the Congressional Budget Office, have said that with a 9.6% unemployment rate, that's the lie that's put out there, it's more like about 17%, and 14 million unemployed already, the benefits provide a much-needed, quote, economic stimulus, end quote, especially heading into the Great White Commerce Elf holidays. And a recent Labor Department report shows that for every dollar spent on unemployment insurance, $2 are reinvested into the economy. By the way, Senate Republicans held up this bill for 2 months during the summer. So, members of the Senate, what should little children of the unemployed be told on Christmas Day? That the great bearded commerce elf only visits the rich. Correcto? Astonishing. It's just astonishing. All the people, you know, you figure 800,000 people who are going to lose their benefits by next week, you multiply that by four, 3.2 million people will have their last bit of income disappear. But the fight for the tax breaks for the millionaires and billionaires continues unabated.
Soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. All right, so this would be a good time to enter into tonight's program, our missive from Prairie 2. It's midnight for America. Reagan was wrong. Midnight is traditionally portrayed as the hour of doom and gloom when large-scale disasters happen. Tonight, 800,000 Americans will lose their last lifeline as their federal unemployment extensions run out. The number will be at least 2 million by Christmas and 3 million by the end of January, and it doesn't stop there. This doesn't include the growing millions of 99ers who have reached the end of their benefits, and even Democrats aren't fighting for them. It appears that Republicans might be willing to extend federal unemployment benefits on the condition that the rich get their $700 billion tax giveaway. The negotiations are being led by Senator John Kyle, Republican of Arizona, who is indicating a deal could be made, but he's holding out for more concessions. The top 1% in this country will get an average $83,347 a year for life. And the unemployed will get an average of $300 a week for another year. That is, unless they've used up their 99 weeks, and then they can just go die. The food banks and homeless shelters have been gearing up for the onslaught of the newly desperate poor, but are finding they're being overwhelmed by the people already running out of benefits without the millions that will come pouring in now that the Republic Scrooges have canceled Christmas. A new phenomenon is growing with an unknown number of neo-migrant workers traveling America. Some say they are already hundreds of thousands of formerly middle-class Americans who now live in RVs, often with kids in tow, in 400 square feet or less. They travel from city to city across the United States doing seasonal work for companies like Amazon.com and others who pay wages that, when adjusted to today's dollars, are little better than the 25-cent minimum wage established in 1938. They are provided free camping spaces for their RVs at the better job sites. I guess it beats traveling by boxcar from job site to job site and living behind barbed wire, but this century is young. And despite all the hype over Black Friday, retail sales were up only 0.5%. That's 0.5% over the previous week. Some store sales were reported to be up 3.5% over the previous year, largely on the deep discounting of big-ticket items. This likely does not translate into higher profits. The black in Black Friday is supposed to be black ink. Although it's always been a little more than Madison Avenue hype, it does send signals about who will have a good year and who will be the next store to be boarded up. With Obama siding with the idiots pushing for austerity, the signal may be that the business that provides window board up service may be the only winner. The DNC has made the bizarre move of asking people on its email list to write letters in support of the freeze in federal workers' wages. With inflation, this is really a cut in pay, saying that cutting costs and spending responsibly has been a cornerstone of this administration's record. That's from the DNC. Paul Krugman has pointed out that that amounts to Obama saying he has always been at war with East Asia. Hope and change are out the window. Cutting wages for the middle class is the new normal. Scratch that. Cutting wages for the middle class has always been the normal. And finally, WikiLeaks expects that the documents that it plans to release in the new year will take down one or more major U.S. banks as they reveal corruption and systemic wrongdoing on a scale similar to Enron. That's according to Julian Assange in an interview with Forbes. He has previously said he has internal documents from Bank of America. This latest revelation explains the new calls from Republicans for his assassination. They weren't nearly as concerned about any alleged national security breach, but don't mess with their benefactors. PrairieNumeral2.com. His letter tonight was more like an episode of 60 Minutes. We had all kinds of topics. Oh, that was good, Bruce. So, some emails regarding this, especially the when I heard about that, about the freeze for federal workers, a 2-year pay freeze for civilian federal workers on Monday. He announced that on Monday. A 2-year pay freeze? Are you kidding me? It'll save $2 billion in the current fiscal year that ends next September. We have a $1.3 trillion annual deficit. $2 billion. As opposed to $1.3 trillion. There's $1,000 billion in a trillion. $1,000 billion. There's $1,300 billion in $1.3 trillion. So the pay freeze will save $2 billion. Well, this is President Obama letting the Republicans and the fat cats and the wealthy know that by damn, he's a team player. About 25 before the hour. And again, this hour is being sponsored by Bob in Henderson, Nevada. Thank you, Bob. He sent a message. Tell all the truth seekers to buy sponsorships. Let's sell out the whole next year so you and Kathy can relax. Well, that would certainly pay the bills, but I don't think we know how to relax anymore. But thank you, Bob. Bob in Henderson, Nevada, who's a sponsor of this hour of the program. Oh, by the way, back to the unemployment non-appearance, the fact that the legislators in this country that are totally owned and operated by the national security state and its scum in the capitalist wealthy, I said there goes Christmas for the children. With all the stuff made in China that the huge gnome brings. Well, William in Hollywood said, not really. He says it relates to no Christmas for the kids, but it wasn't about presents. For a lot of them, it was food and a chance to see some kind of hope. And William adds, I think we've reached some sort of tipping point. Nah, not yet. Not until the money completely runs out and the wealthy get their extension. And even then, maybe not. Kay in San Francisco, our education affairs correspondent, wrote, Mike, I'm so relieved that President Obama is freezing the pay of federal workers. After all, people like my friend Karen, who goes after big-time polluters for the EPA, Karen is responsible for the horrific deficit this nation is running, right? Her five-figure salary, that the lowest number in a five-figure salary, of course, is $10,000 a year. Okay. Her five-figure salary plus basic benefits for her husband and three children are just over the top. Environmental safety be damned. Family values be damned. This kind of irresponsible spending must be stopped. But the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, continuing corporate welfare and tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans, all of that spending must stay in place. I mean, those outlays are absolutely positively necessary for the well-being of all Americans, right? To me, Kay writes, this is just another example of how President Obama continues to try to appeal to the right wing. He thinks actions like this will please them and bring them to the negotiating table. Freezing federal employee salaries definitely does please Republicans because it means another blow to the middle class. But the only negotiating they will ever participate in is the kind where Obama gives everything away and congressional fat cats will continue to enjoy their generous paychecks and federally funded benefits while people like my friend, a lifelong Democrat who enthusiastically voted for Obama, will be forced to tighten their belts even further. Right-wingers in this country have clearly demonstrated that they hate this president because of who he is, an African-American man. At the same time, they have him exactly where they want him. Check and mate. Kay at kaysreportcard.com. Yeah, he came out of that meeting today. He had a meeting today, didn't he, with the Republican leadership. Republican leadership. Jesus Christ, what a thought. What a term. and once again, Obama comes out talking about A, B, and C, and the Republican swine, Boehner and Cantor, come out talking about X, Y, and Z. It's astonishing. And there's Obama standing up there, you know, with his grand look, trying to convince the reporters, whoever he was addressing, that, oh, yes, all is well in America's great house of legislation. We're going to work together. It should be clear now that this president is beyond hope. He's not going to get it ever. He is going to be a one-termer. Not by his choosing. Remember what we talked about a couple of months ago. He should choose. Right after the election, it wasn't a couple of months ago. He should choose to be a one-termer. And then tell the Republicans to kiss his black ass. And anyone else who feels inclined to challenge him. If he were a white guy, I would say kiss his white ass. So what difference does it make? But you get the point. But not this president. This president is an enabler. He is enabling the fascist takeover of this country. And I think most Democrats have finally gotten it. This guy is hopeless. Forget about it. Forget about it. The wealthy will make, or the Republicans will make sure the wealthy keep their tax cuts, but Mr. President announced a two-year pay freeze for civilian federal workers. Oh, my God. You know, William referred to a tipping point. I don't think it'll ever come. I think American middle class has been so beaten and kicked around that they'll start listening to the demagogues even more so than they are listening now. Union leaders said Mr. Obama was playing politics at workers' expense. John Gage, president of the American Federation of Government Employees, said in an interview, it's a panic reaction. It's superficial. People in this country voted for jobs and income. Sticking it to a VA nurse or a Social Security worker is not the way to go. Mr. Gage went on to say that the notion that federal employees make too much money is a myth, especially in light of million-dollar bonuses paid to Wall Street executives, who he said helped trigger the financial crisis that plunged the nation into this depression. A typical Border Patrol officer makes $34,000 a year. A federal nursing assistant makes $27,000 a year. A mine inspector makes $38,000 a year. Mr. Gage added, we're easy scapegoats, and we weren't the ones who got us into this fix. Now, Republicans, as you can well imagine, welcomed Obama's announcement. Yes! Thank you, boy! Even as they criticized it as not being aggressive enough, according to New York Times, Representative Daryl Issa, a California Republican who was at one time charged with auto theft, and is likely to become the chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, said in a statement, quote, at a time when our nation's seniors, like this son of a bitch cares about this nation's seniors, have been denied a cost of living increase, and private sector hiring is stagnant, it is both necessary and, quite frankly, long overdue to institute a pay freeze for the federal workforce. End quote. Oh, my. Oh, my. Patrick in San Francisco writes, Mike, I'm a far-left progressive, and I do as much as I can to actively support a variety of causes. I have a litmus test of sorts to determine the likely success of the things I get involved with. My best friend is very middle-class, white-collar, average American male, and is an educated voter who leans Democratic, but I would classify him as a true independent. I talk to him about issues and then ask him, would you be willing to march in the streets for whatever this issue is? Would you fight the government to further this cause? He always answers, I would if, and then gives his list of conditions. Based on how many and how probable those conditions are is how I select what I volunteer for, give money to, etc. My belief has always been, until I can convince him to take to the streets, how am I going to convince other people who are typical Americans? Last night, we talked at some length about the unemployment vote that was coming up. So I knew he was paying attention. He called me shortly after the vote. I'm ready, he said. Okay. I asked him, what are the ifs? Flatly, he replied, no ifs. My blood ran cold. I think we're much closer than any of us think, including those of us who are on the left. Patrick, San Francisco. We'll be right back.
Bye.
life's too short to listen to right-wing radio. Here's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Again, thanks to Bob in Henderson, Nevada, who has sponsored the hour you just listened to. Send a message with his sponsorship. Tell all truth seekers to buy sponsorships that sell out the whole next year so you and Kathy can relax. Thanks, Bob. Bob in Henderson, Nevada. Last week, Rich in Greensburg, PA wrote this. Mike, I turned your sound down to listen to my local 11 o'clock news. I live in Pittsburgh. And I had the WTAE TV4 news on. Did I hear anything about how the House voted on unemployment? No, I didn't. Instead, I heard how Hillary Duff is married to a Pittsburgh penguin and how much she likes Pittsburgh because it is raining out and it never rains in L.A. The blank that they peddle for news is nothing but pop culture garbage, nothing of any substance or importance. Sorry for my rant, I just had to vent. Thanks and take care. Rich in Greensburg, PA. No, that wasn't a rant, Rich. That was just a mild complaint. Hillary Duff is happy to live in PA, in Pittsburgh, because it rains there. Oh, and that makes the news. Oh, my goodness. Tony writes... Tony from 1090 is what? That's KPOJ or is that Seattle? That's in Seattle? I should know this. Tony in Seattle writes, I'm listening to you on AM 1090 online. I love your show every single night. I have to express my extreme frustration on how willfully ignorant people are to the current crisis going on in our country. I live politics and constantly post on my Facebook page about the issues and tragedies taking place. The frustration takes hold when I realize that nobody cares. Everybody goes on watching their Dancing with the Stars or talking about what they ate for dinner tonight while millions of people and children are starving to death in what used to be the greatest country in the world. It sickens me to think of how many children are going to bed hungry tonight and tomorrow night, and every other night because of the pure selfishness and stupidity of those in control and the willfully ignorant. It's almost as if it's not happening to them, so they couldn't care less. What has happened to this country to cause this pure madness we're witnessing? Had this vote taken place in France or England, there would be riots in the streets. But, of course, when an injustice of this magnitude takes place in America, we sit on our asses. It saddens me to no end, and I have no idea what to do about it. Tony, who is a residential appraiser, it says here. The top Republicans came out of their first meeting with Obama since he got shellacked. And said that the conversation they had today yielded an agreement by the president to begin negotiations on the future of the Bush tax cuts that are supposed to expire December 31st. John Boehner said, quote, we had a very frank conversation. It was interesting that both Democrats and Republicans understood what the American people had to say election day. The president and Democrat leaders agree that the American people want us to create jobs and cut spending. And for his part, Mr. Obama told reporters he was pleased with the meeting. He called the atmosphere in the room extremely civil. He noted that there is always political incentive to try to defeat the opposition in a hyper-partisan climate. But Obama said he was pleased to see several of my friends in the room say, let's try not to do that. McConnell said after the meeting, that would be Mitch. The beard McConnell said after the meeting that he told Obama the Republicans are united in their opposition to letting the tax cuts expire, even for the wealthiest Americans. He said, get this, this is McConnell, we ought to treat all taxpayers the same. Really? Well, you mean everybody pays the same percentage or everybody pays the same amount? What do you mean? Obama said he was optimistic that the country would have answers in the next couple of days on the issue. Oh, my God. Boehner said, we had a very nice meeting today. We've had lots of nice meetings. The question is, can we find the common ground the American people expect us to find? We've had lots of nice meetings. You like my tan? Obama, of course, remained upbeat about the meeting, saying that, quote, people came to it with the spirit of trying to work together. He added, none of this is going to be easy. And then Obama said something that shows absolutely how totally and completely beyond the fringe, around the bend, out of touch this man is. He said, quote, the next election is 2 years away. There's plenty of time for campaigning. We need to choose the best of our ideas over the worst of our politics, end quote. O-M-F-G. Did you really say that, Mr. President? Yes, gentle listener, he did. We'll be back after the break. By the way, you probably noticed that the program is live tonight, and so far, no glitches! However, we are not streaming video tonight, so maybe tomorrow night. Stay with us. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about WikiLeaks. It is 7 past the hour, and this hour's sponsor is Alain Brouillard, is that how you pronounce it? I think it's Alain Brouillard. Anyway, Alain writes, tonight's second hour is sponsored in the loving memory of my grandfather, Gordon Parks. Photographer, poet, composer, and the first African-American director in Hollywood with his film, The Learning Tree. Any truth seekers who are interested in preserving his legacy can donate to the Gordon Parks Foundation. All information can be found at the website, gordonparksfoundation.org. Well, I'll be damned. Oh, and then Elaine adds, now, having said that, I authorize Mike Malloy to deliver another kick-ass hour programming. I have been a Gordon Parks fan for decades. He died recently. Well, within the last 5 years, I believe. So his grandson, Alain, Brulade. Brulade. It's French. Is the sponsor of the second hour tonight. Thank you, Alain. I appreciate it. Your grandpa was a great photographer for sure. Oh, this just came through, sent in by Jude. It's from the Associated Press. All airlines now providing passengers' personal data. Huh? All 197 airlines that fly to the U.S. are now collecting names, genders, and birth dates of passengers so the government can check them against terror watch lists before they fly, the Obama administration announced today, getting all air carriers that travel to or through the United States to provide this information marks a milestone in the government's counterterrorism efforts and completes one of the 9/11 Commission's recommendations. The program called Secure Flight has been delayed for years because of privacy concerns and went through three versions before it was approved. It's designed to give U.S. authorities more time to identify and remove suspected terrorists from flights and reduce instances when passengers are mistaken for people on terrorist watch lists. Boom, 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 boom. Compliance with the program has been phased in over the last year, and many travelers have already been supplying their gender, birth date, and full name, as it appears, on the government identification when they purchase their tickets. Well, there you go. Terrorists did win, huh? WikiLeaks. What a story. I remember bringing it up a couple, 3 weeks ago that the announcement had been made that another document dump was coming. This one primarily from the State Department, and it's a doozy, isn't it? I think Julian Assange is a global hero. I don't care what his attitude is towards the United States. His attitude is simply that the truth is better than the lies and fiction that, for some reason, we humans have decided to live by. We don't live by truth. We live by deception, misinformation, disinformation. And sometimes it's carried to an extreme, like Glenn Beck or Rush Limbaugh, but or Hitler. But in most instances, it is just business as usual, like Hillary Clinton or George W. Bush or Barack Obama. Distortions, misinformation, disinformation, lies, characterizations that are less than flattering, mischaracterizations. Bob Alexander wrote an interesting piece that I may get to. I don't know if I can get to it tonight. Ponerology. You know what ponerology is? Sounds almost something you'd find on a sex website, ponerology, but it's not. It's the study of evil. But before we even attempt to get to it, WikiLeaks. One of the things, I spent some time reading what the Times put out, went online and read what the Guardian put out. And by the way, Lieberman, Joe Lieberman was on Fox News the other day bitching and moaning about the New York Times releasing the information. Where is it? The truth is that the New York Times getting the information from Assange. But as usual, this creepy son of a bitch, Joe Lieberman, had it completely wrong. The New York Times did not get the information from Assange. They weren't included in the document dump this time. They got it from The Guardian of the U.K., Now, that might sound like a small matter, but the truth is it's not. Lieberman is such a freak. I mean, he's such a complete freak. But that's just what I was talking about, you know? Lies and deception. That's the way it works. Oh, here it is. This is yesterday. Lieberman went on Don Imus's radio show to discuss the WikiLeaks story. Lieberman did little to dissuade his critics on the left when he declared that his favorite television channels are Fox Business and, quote, Fox generally, anything Rupert Murdoch owns. Really, Joe? A devout Orthodox Jew such as you, a devout Zionist such as you, you are saying that about Rupert Murdoch? You got to be kidding me. And I'll explain why in a second here. But Lieberman said the following, quote, incidentally, I heard last night I was watching CNN and Joe Jones was on, and he was doing the 10 o'clock news, and he said that CNN had been offered these documents by WikiLeaks, but it turned it down because they refused to sign a pledge granting the source anonymity, which the New York Times did. And I give CNN and whoever else turned it down credit for doing that. The New York Times' hands are dirty in this, and they should have said no. Imus.
I hate CNN, and I wish I hadn't brought that up.
Lieberman. I'm sorry about that. It just happened. But, of course, really, Fox Business is my favorite, and Fox generally. Anything Rupert Murdoch owns. Okay. You said it, Joe. Let's extrapolate just a tad. The leaked documents report that Saudi donors remain the chief providers of millions to Sunni militant groups like Al-Qaeda. It's no secret that Saudi Arabia's obsession with propagating Wahhabi Islam has led to the strengthening of the fundamental mindset in the Muslim world. During the Afghan jihad, the Saudis funded most of the madrasas in Pakistan and also supported militant networks with tons of money. The Saudis continue to do that to date. Bottom line, Rupert Murdoch's state terrorism broadcast network continues to accept money in the form of investment cash from one of the Saudi princes. And the Saudi royals, taken collectively, is the second most engaged terror-sponsoring state on Earth. Second only, of course, to us. But every time you dumbasses turn on Rupert Murdoch's terrorism network, remember who's funding it. And you, Lieberman, you disgusting rat. You disgusting rat. You're going to sit there and say, anything Murdoch does, you approve of. Do you not understand that money goes into Murdoch's operation from the same source that provides money to organizations, Joe, who want to cut your head off? You ignorant man.
For a liberal helping of truth, it's More Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Before I get back to the WikiLeaks thing, I have a listener in L.A. named Tim, who has just started a website, blog site. Go check it out. Give him a few hits. It's Tim from Los Angeles, .blogspot.com. It is writing from an Asian American perspective. Tim from Los Angeles, .blogspot.com. Go ahead, do it. But he sent me this. Tempers flared at an unemployment office in Louisville as the end nears for federally funded extended jobless benefits. This is from today. Local CBS affiliate WLKY captured a bit of the scene on Monday. Amid some commotion, a man could be heard saying in a raised voice, "What did you just say to me?" WLKY reported that, quote, at least two people were escorted out of the office, end quote, with the threat of benefits expiring for 100,000 Kentuckians. WLKY reported, tempers are flaring. Oh, but Kentucky, come on, you've got Rand Paul. Rand Paul says unemployment compensation is unconstitutional. What are you complaining about, you phony bastards? This is what you voted for. 100,000 Kentuckians are due to lose their unemployment. Either the end of the week coming, the end of December. This is what you voted for. You voted for this. You don't remember?
Oh, goddamn, we'll show those freaks up there in Washington. Let's vote for Rand Paul. He doesn't believe in any of this unemployment crap. It's unconstitutional.
Okay. You were warned. You miserable whine! I can't process the story. People standing in line in Kentucky at an unemployment office. Oh, I know. Okay, you're going to tell me this. These were Democrats. No, no. Tim writes, imagine that. The Republicans have managed to deflect any form of anger toward themselves for war crimes by shifting the blame of the unemployment benefits cut to the Obama administration and the Democrats, when it was they, the Republicans, who were responsible for creating the mess. And what will the Democratic Party do in Congress? Absolutely nothing. And that's why I'm depressed and sigh a lot, too. But I keep blogging, and I keep getting more and more depressed. Tim from L.A. Tim from Los Angeles. Blogspot.com. Go ahead, damn it. Just go look at his site. Put a couple of hundred hits on it real quick. Tim from Los Angeles. Blogspot.com. See what he's got to say. He sends me good emails. See what he's got to say on his website. We know that Americans will pay no attention to anything of any substance in the leaked documents. Hillary Clinton should be fired. Most of our diplomatic corps should be run out of town. They will be eventually. The kind of deception and lies and deceit, and not just in the usual areas where you'd expect it, in South Asia, in the Middle East, in Europe, in our relations with our so-called allies, the fact that Hillary Clinton ordered apparently the collecting of spit from some of our so-called allies in order to get DNA samples. Yeah. Can you believe this? This is what happens when empire dies. But it's what happened in Central and South America that is particularly disturbing. Remember the coup that took place in Honduras June a year ago? Oh, I know. It's a million years, and who gives a damn? The U.S. Embassy in Tegucigalpa sent a cable to Washington, and the subject line was, "Open and shut, the case of the Honduran coup." And this cable asserted, quote, "There is no doubt that the events of June 28, overthrowing the government of Honduras, constituted an illegal and unconstitutional coup." The embassy listed arguments being made by supporters of the coup to claim its legality and dismissed them. Thus, here's how it was dismissed. Quote, "None has any substantive validity under the Honduran constitution," end quote. The Honduran military clearly had no legal authority to remove President Manuel Zelaya, remember this, from office or from Honduras, the embassy said. And the action was described as an abduction or kidnapping, yada, yada, yada. Now, it is inconceivable that any top U.S. official responsible for U.S. policy in Honduras was not familiar with the contents of that cable. But what happened? I'll tell you when we come back.
Hey, truth seekers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Okay, WikiLeaks. A little bit on Honduras. I know, it doesn't mean squat to us. We've been butchering Hondurans for, 125 years. We've been butchering Central Americans. This is the whole function of Julian Assange's WikiLeaks is to expose this stuff. And why? I don't know. Maybe for no reason. Maybe it's ridiculous to think that anyone gives a damn what U.S. foreign policy is. But I'll tell you what, you know, all this is being done in my name, in your name. All this butchery, all of the, you know, I've identified the United States as the number one terrorist organization on earth in the history of the human race. A lot of people go, what is he talking about? What about Hitler? No. Hitler was a warmongering freak who caused 60 million people to die globally after he invaded Poland. But the largest terrorist organization on earth is the U.S. government, and it has been. It doesn't matter who is the president, Democrat, Republican, it doesn't matter. Even the sainted FDR was a global terrorist because of the policies put into place or continued in place during his administration. Ever since Teddy Roosevelt, the United States has been a terrorist organization numero uno on earth. Now, you can't handle that? Okay, go stick your head back in the sand and forget about it. Just forget about it. In Honduras, the U.S. Embassy in Tegucigalpa sent this thing on June 28th. The coup took place on June 28th. A month later, July 24th, U.S. government sent a cable to Washington that said there's no doubt the events constituted illegal and unconstitutional coup. There was no substantive validity under the Honduran Constitution for what occurred. Yada, yada, yada. Now, as WikiLeaks points out, it's inconceivable that any top U.S. official responsible for U.S. policy in Honduras was not familiar with the comments in that cable, which summarized the assessment of the U.S. Embassy in Honduras on key facts that were politically disputed by supporters of the coup regime. The cable was addressed to Tom Shannon, then Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs, Harold Coe, the State Department's legal advisor, Dan Restrepo, Senior Director for Western Hemisphere Affairs at the National Security Council. The cable was sent to the White House and to Secretary of State Clinton. But despite all that, despite the fact the U.S. government was crystal clear on what had transpired, we did not cut off aid to Honduras as required by U.S. law. Do you remember this? I remember talking about this like, oh my God, we're supposed not to be supporting a military coup, but we did. Instead, a month after the cable was sent, the State Department, in its public pronouncements, pretended that the events of June 28th, in particular, who did what to whom, were murky and needed further study by State Department lawyers. And there's more. There's so much more. But that's the attempt to overthrow the elected government in Venezuela. The attempt to effect a coup in that country against Hugo Chavez. I mean, all of it. Everything that's been told the American public has been a goddamn lie. All of it. not just about Venezuela or Honduras or Panama or Vietnam or China or Pakistan or Afghanistan or Iraq or Iran or Israel or Palestine or pick a place. Every single bit of information fed to the American public has been a lie in order to further the goals of corporate fascism or fascist capitalism or capital fascism or whatever. And here we all sit. Here we all sit now. 85% of us holding on. 40% of us in the tank. Wondering what the hell is going to happen next. And we have a bunch of filthy corporate-controlled bastards in Washington, D.C. deciding that $700 billion to the wealthy is more important than $65 billion to the unemployed. Brouillot, Alain Brouillot, is the sponsor of tonight's second hour. He is the grandson of Gordon Parks, photographer, poet, composer, first African-American director in Hollywood. Alain Brouillot is the guy who calls us from Helsinki every once in a while. Remember, if you're a regular listener, you've heard him call from Finland. Sorry, Elaine. Hell, I had a hard enough time learning how to pronounce his first name. Alain Brouillot, tonight's second hour sponsor of this program. The WikiLeaks thing just goes on and on. It is endless entertainment. Endless entertainment. If the average American, that'd be somebody like you or me, were to sit down with the expurgated copies of these cables that have been released by the Guardian of the UK to the New York Times, or if you are versed in French or German, you can read it in those languages. Although, the release of the documents to, was it Der Spiegel and Le Figaro? They pertain more to European revelations, whereas the documents as presented by the New York Times pertain more to the United States, foreign policy, United States policy in the Western Hemisphere, yada, yada, yada. But it's great entertainment. It beats the hell out of watching What's-Her-Name's Daughter on Dancing with the Stars. It really does. Because as you read through this stuff, from the trivial to the maddening, from the petty to the outrageous, from and you read this stuff and you come to one solid conclusion. Anybody who ever again, under any circumstances, trusts any kind of promise, statement, treaty agreed to by the United States is a fool. An absolute moronic, gibbering, drooling fool. Now, a lot of people in this country have known that for the past half century. You knew that. You knew that when you found out about the Gulf of Tonkin resolution. You knew it when you realized that George W. Bush had been given a presidential daily brief that said Osama bin Laden determined to strike in the United States. And he said to the soldier, whoever it was that delivered it to him, okay, you covered your ass, you can go now. And then they did nothing. So to a lot of people in this country, and I put myself in that group, there's no surprise here. What is surprising and what makes this entertaining is that now you can actually read it. You can actually see it. Memos from our crack diplomatic corps and State Department. There it is. Hours of reading entertainment. And if you are slick enough, you can cross-reference some of these documents with what was told to the American public and the world, i.e. the coup in Honduras, the attempt to overthrow Chavez in Venezuela, on and on and on. And of course, the thing is, what is notable about these reports is what it doesn't cover about, oh, for example, our operations against Nicaragua back in the 80s. Our operations against Panama in the 80s. Pick a place, El Salvador. What we did in El Salvador. That's not included. That I've discovered yet. I've scratched the surface on looking at this stuff. So the Obama administration yesterday, this is how it's reported by McClatchy newspapers. The Obama administration moved Monday to contain potential damage to U.S. national security from the WikiLeaks release of tens of thousands of sensitive U.S. diplomatic documents and said it might take criminal action against the whistleblowing internet site. Ooh! Get those bastards! They're telling the truth! We will not tolerate the truth! We cannot! You see, when empire is dying, when it's in the process of dying, when it's walking around with its own vital fluids leaking into its own combat boots, it will not tolerate the truth. It cannot. No! We are empire! No, you're not. Oh, by the way, you're kind of making the squishy noise when you're walking. Do you realize you're bleeding to death, Mr. Empire? Get the truth teller! Arrest him! Good luck. Attorney General Eric Holder said, quote, an active ongoing criminal investigation is underway. And he indicated that foreigners associated with WikiLeaks, including its Australian founder, Julian Assange, could be targeted. He said, let me be very clear, it's not saber-rattling. To the extent that we can find anybody who is involved in the breaking of American law, they will be held responsible. They will be held accountable. Woo! Go get them, Eric!
Truth seekers, gather around the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, we're going to be talking about a religious thing next hour. Poor Hindus. You got to hear it. You got to hear it. You got to hear it. Stick around. And I know why Portland, Oregon was the scene of the latest thwarted terror attack. And we share that with you, too. And finally, once again, this hour, sponsored by Elaine Brujo in Helsinki, Finland. Thanks, Elaine. David Korn. Mother Jones, The Nation, you know. Should Hillary Clinton resign as Secretary of State due to the WikiLeaks revelations? My friend Jack Schaefer at Slate makes a good case. His reason? Clinton, like predecessor Condoleezza Rice, signed orders instructing U.S. Foreign Service officers to spy on the diplomats of other nations. Cables went out under her name telling State Department officials overseas to collect the fingerprints, facial images, DNA, and iris scans of African leaders to obtain passwords, credit card numbers, and frequent flyer accounts used by foreign diplomats, and to gather private information on United Nations officials, including Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. Diplomats are not spies, though spies do pose as diplomats. They do collect information by working contacts overseas, reviewing the local media, interacting with the population of the nations where they're stationed, often acquiring intelligence that is as valuable, if not more so, than the secrets snatched by intelligence officials. But there is a line between a diplomat and a spook. The former uses above-board methods to find out what his or her government needs to know about other nations. The latter resorts to espionage, wiretaps, bribery, and other underhanded means. There are many reasons for keeping the two roles distinct. Diplomats are awarded immunity and can gain certain access overseas because they are not spies. Now that the Hillary Clinton State Department has blurred the line, U.S. diplomats who have to contend with the assumption that any U.S. official abroad is really working for the CIA will have an additional burden to bear when doing their jobs overseas. One of the many WikiLeaks revelations that emerged in the past few days and more to come in the next few months is the news that U.S. diplomats have been turned into part-time spies. That certainly warrants thorough investigation. Obama administration officials, of course, have tried to make the leak itself the paramount issue. Attorney General Eric Holder has promised prosecutions if we can find anybody involved in breaking American law. Clinton has called the leak an attack on America's foreign policy interests, claiming it has endangered innocent people. Republican Representative Peter King urged Hillary Clinton to determine if WikiLeaks can be designated a terrorist organization. You're goddamn right it can! It's speaking the truth! It's revealing things written by Americans. Of course it is a terrorist organization! Senator Joe Lieberman has called on the United States and other governments to shut down WikiLeaks. Sarah Palin blamed President Barack Obama's incompetence for the leaks. Don't you just want to... And yet, there has, so far, not been any such passionate calls for investigating the transformation of U.S. diplomats into undercover snoops. You focus on the messenger, not the message. So, and it goes on. David Corn writing this someplace. I don't know. Where was this? Was this at... who knows? But we do know that David Corn wrote it. So, should Hillary Clinton now be included? She was responsible for ordering U.S. diplomatic figures to engage in espionage activities in the United Nations in violation of the international agreements to which the U.S. has signed up. But we don't pay any attention to that anymore. Oh, my God, this is so quaint, isn't it, to be sitting here talking about, well, should Hillary Clinton resign because she has taken the diplomatic corps of the United States government and turned it into a nest of spies who go around swabbing spit off of glasses from diplomats, getting photographs of their iris configurations. Jesus God! Should she be fired for that? Why? I mean, is that a surprise that we do those sorts of things? Is it a surprise? I mean, we are the country that after our own people, people from the UN, people from all over the globe, from Germany, from Russia, from the UK, from France, from China, our own Marines, after months and months and months of investigation as to whether or not Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, and we were told over and over again, it does not exist, we decided to go commit mass murder anyway. And we did. And we destabilized the entire country. Oh, we got the dictator. We got that son of a bitch, didn't we? Ho, ho, ho! So why is it a surprise to find out? It certainly isn't to me. Is it to you, Truth Seeker? I doubt it. Why would it be a surprise to find out that Hillary Clinton, our Secretary of State, has turned the diplomatic corps into a bunch of lying sons of bitching sneaks who go around swabbing spit off of foreign diplomats' drinking glasses. I mean, really. Over there. Here, come back here. Come back. Okay. Now, this hour is sponsored by Marlo Hall, who writes into Mike and family, a special thank you for your honesty, courage, good human values, and good work. Yours truly, Marlo Hall. Thanks, Marlo. Just when you thought it couldn't get any weirder, the religious craziness in this country, now it is Hinduism's turn in the barrel, so to speak. You hear about this? This has to do with yoga. You know yoga? Everybody takes yoga, right? Little kids take it. Women take it. Men take it. Yoga. Old people practice. About 15 million people in the United States practice or attempt to practice various yoga positions. There's hot yoga and cold yoga and yoga on your cereal and no, that's yogurt. All kinds of yoga. And the reasons that people in the United States, and I would assume the rest of the world, practice yoga is for the physical benefits that have been, according to New York Times, they've been mapped in brain scans. Your brain actually gets happy and does meditative things and releases lots of alpha rays. Is it alpha rays? When practicing yoga. And, of course, there are waves. What is alpha rays? Pew, 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 pew. No, alpha waves like, ooh. There's a difference between and big difference.
Yeah, one would make you a superhero.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, yoga, 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 yoga. Everybody knows what yoga is, right? You know what yoga is? If you remember back when yoga became de rigueur, how do you say that? Is that right? Okay. You do the French, I do the Spanish. It was kind of promoted by the New Age people back in the 70s and 80s, most of the 80s, as a means of spiritual centering. Because religion, you see, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam doesn't center you. It pulls you into a million pieces. It pulls you this way and then that way and then up and down and blah, 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 on and on and on. The three religions based on the book are pretty fracturing, whereas yoga is, so they say, centering. And of course, this is what drove the Christians crazy. Remember all that stuff that still pops up every once in a while? It's a demon religion. Has to do with an elephant. Anyway, religion, where it concerns yoga in this country, really has not had a whole lot to do with the practice of yoga. Most Americans do not consider it a religious exercise. They consider it a relaxation technique or a technique to build flexibility, you know. A group of Indian Americans now has ignited what the Times calls a surprisingly fierce debate in the gentle world of yoga by mounting a campaign to acquaint us Westerners with the faith that this group says underlined every single yoga style followed in gyms, ashrams, and spas. No matter what pose you take, what position, what stretch, you are practicing, according to this group, Hinduism. Looks like those Christian crazy people were right. Hinduism. The campaign is labeled Take Back Yoga. Take Back Yoga. O-M-F-G. Take Back Yoga. And now it doesn't ask yoga devotees to become Hindu or instructors to teach more about Hinduism. But the organization suggests only that people become more aware of yoga's debt to the to Hinduism's ancient traditions. Now, can you imagine a bunch of middle-class suburbanites? No offense to middle-class suburbanites. I happen to know some. Some of them are good friends. But they go to a hot yoga class, and they're in there trying to tone up and, you know, stave off the encroachment of their impending doom at some point down the road. And they have to pause and think about, oh, well, this has to do with Hinduism? No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Now, the suggestion, a little bit more of this, I'm going to move on. This just caught my eye. This just makes me crazy. It does. It really makes me crazy. The suggestion that yoga should be more directly linked to Hinduism and acknowledged as such has brought howls from figures far apart on the religious spectrum, let's say. Dr. Deepak Chopra, you know who that is, New Age writer, has dismissed the campaign as a jumble of faulty history and Hindu nationalism. No, really? And the president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, Dr. R. Albert Moeller, Jr., I think he's a doctor, has said he agrees that yoga is Hindu. And he cited that as evidence that if you practice yoga, Christians are imperiling their souls. if you sit in a half lotus or do downward looking dog, facing downward facing dog, or salute the morning or whatever the hell, if you go through any of these yoga poses, you are risking your soul. Now, this is really, that's the part that I thought was really funny. Once again, the Christians are the ones who make a valid claim to the most crazy point of view regarding this topic, that you are imperiling your soul if you do yoga positions because, you know, the Hindu god cowman or whoever it is. Oh, now I'm really going to get in trouble for saying that, right? Ganesh, the Hindu god whose provenance you are assuming when you take these positions will be offended if you are not acknowledging Hinduism. Anyway, that's what the head of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary believes. And in acknowledging a Hindu god, they have a lot of them. They have a lot of gods. In acknowledging that, if you do that, then you are opening the gate so that these demons can rush in, capture your soul, and take it to Hindustan or wherever they take it to otherwise abuse it and beat it and reshape it into a creature. other than Jesus or something. Now, I find that all amusing because the Christians, of course, have stolen just about every one of their religious traditions from other religions. I'll, you name one for me that it does not have the feasts, all the feasts, the big holidays, the super holy days, the resurrection, the crucifixion, the birth, all of those are stolen, flat out taken from other religions, especially the one soon upon us here, the Christians' belief in the birth of their Savior on December 25th, all those 2,000 years ago. So I just find it amusing every time a Christian theologian from the right opens his or her mouth about some other religion, especially in a case like this where, oh, if you practice yoga, you are using positions and ideas and symbols that represent Hinduism, and therefore you are opening your soul to being captured. And yet these are the same people, if you suggested to them that in practicing the holy days of Christianity, they're opening their soul to Celtic or Wiccan capture, they look at you like you are crazy. Isn't this a great time of the year?
Microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Just a couple more comments on the reported effort by this Indian-American group to reclaim yoga as spiritual or the physical offshoot of Hinduism. And the resulting craziness that has got everybody's, well, not everybody's, but a lot of people in this country got their balls completely in an uproar, which is just the opposite of what yoga is supposed to do, right? It's supposed to calm you down, stretch you out. But anyway, this effort to relink Hinduism and yoga by the Hindu American Foundation, it's called, a small group of Indian Americans. Like I said, it's got Deepak Chopra all upset. It's got the head of the President of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary all upset. The Baptist thinks that if you practice yoga now, the Hindu gods will sneak in and cart off your soul. A professor of Indian religions at the University of Colorado said this debate, is that what it is, a debate? Sounds like a bunch of people screaming at each other, as usual. That's what debate is in this country now. Anyway, the professor says the debate has raised important issues about a spectrum of Hindu concepts permeating American culture, including meditation, belief in karma and reincarnation, and even cremation. All of these ideas you see are Hindu in origin. And they have been spreading through the American culture, such as it is, for a number of years, decades. I was watching CNN this morning. Who's the woman on in the morning? Not early morning, but after 9 o'clock. She's on for, I guess, from 9 to 11. But she was in Kira. That's right, Kira Phillips. She was interviewing a woman who runs a business, and to cut back expenses, the woman kept all her employees and removed herself. She laid herself off and kept her employees, which is pretty neat. I think that's a good idea. But Kira Phillips said, well, I believe in karma, so this will come back and benefit you, or something to that effect. Good karma, she said. And I'm sitting there thinking, hey, wait a minute. that's Hindu. That's Hinduism. See? They've even got a toehold in CNN. Is it not crazy?
Huh?
Sometimes you have to stop and think that the best thing to do right now is just to kick back and order up more popcorn. While we were off over Thanksgiving, the news broke about this thwarted attack in Portland? Portland, Oregon? We were sitting in a cabin in the North Georgia Mountains, eight of us, and trying to figure out why Portland. I know that's where Tom Hartman lives. Maybe they were trying to get Hartman. I'm not sure. But why Portland? And I had no idea, except, okay, so they've got a teenager there, a 19-year-old kid, who I guess he was, lived there all his life? Hasn't he? I mean, isn't the kid from Portland? Mohammed? Is that his name? Could that be his name? I guess so. Anyway, why Portland, Oregon, and why the Christmas tree lighting, and why, you know, these are amazing questions. A bunch of people, hundreds of people, thousands of people get together in downtown Portland, in a section of the city that Portlanders call the city's living room, Pioneer Courthouse Square. Mohammed, 19, accused of plotting to bomb the square during a Christmas tree lighting ceremony. And when you first hear that story, it raises a lot of questions. For us, the questions were, has this kid traveled someplace to get into a religious school, like Southern Baptist Theological Seminary or the equivalent thereof in Islam that teaches hatred and contempt and disgust of everybody else? Is that what happened? Did he go someplace to one of Rupert Murdoch's terrorist organization's investors, one of the Saudi princes who invests heavily in Murdoch's terrorist media organization? Did this kid go to one of those schools and learn how to hate Americans to the point of blowing up a bunch of kids and women and daddies and people standing around watching a Christmas tree get lit? What happened? Where did this kid? Well, I have the answer now. Thanks to Alice in Arkansas. I'll share it with you when we come back. But think about that. Where did this 19-year-old kid, who lives in Portland, Oregon, get the idea to go downtown Portland on Christmas tree lighting night and turn everybody into red mist?
Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malone.
This hour is sponsored, like I mentioned earlier, by Marlo Hall, who sends a very nice note along with her sponsorship. Thanks, Marlo. I appreciate it. 25 before the hour. Okay, so why Portland? Who would want to bomb Portland? I think we have the answer. And Alice in Arkansas saw it in this morning's Times and sent it to us. Here is a quote out of the article that Alice sent in. "Who would want to bomb here?" said Naoki Irai, a 29-year-old from Japan who is a graduate student at Portland State University. Betty Behrens, the tourist from Seattle, said, "I was astounded." In response to the thwarted plot, here it comes. Mayor Sam Adams has floated the idea of cooperating more fully with federal law enforcement agencies. In 2005, the Portland City Council passed an ordinance that put conditions on the city's continued participation in the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force out of concern for the civil liberties of residents. Now, Mayor Adams said he was prepared to reconsider his opposition. He said, quote, "It's been 5 years since our latest, or since our last policy review," end quote. And there you have it. Alice writes, "Portland puts conditions on its participation with the FBI out of concern for civil liberties. And the FBI targets Portland, finding some poor teenager, setting him up, supplying him with bomb materials, and sets him out to bomb the Christmas tree lighting ceremony. Portland citizens are terrorized, and the city council falls into line." And so it goes. That was easy. Wasn't that easy? Huh? In response to the thwarted plot, Mayor Sam Adams has floated the idea of cooperating more fully now with federal law enforcement agencies. In 2005, during the Bush-Cheney reign of terror in the United States, the Portland City Council said no, insofar as that city would continue to participate in the FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force. No, because they were concerned about the civil liberties, the constitutional guarantees and protections of their citizens. It took them 5 years, but they finally, you know, this kid was 14 when the city of Portland said, okay, we don't like this too much. 5 years. Portland city officials now say they are also concerned about the safety of Portland's Muslim population. The Muslims in this country are approaching the same status, and there's no argument here, as Jews in Germany in the early 30s. The police in Portland have now authorized additional patrols around Muslim community centers, as according to a police spokesman in that city. At a news conference outside City Hall, attended by the mayor, Sam Adams, and Muslim leaders, a man named Casey Jama, executive director of Portland Center for Intercultural Organizing, condemned the bombing attempt. Mr. Jama said, quote, "We left Somalia because of war, and we would like to live in peace," end quote. And the kid, the 19-year-old, he made his first court appearance this morning, earlier. A city commissioner, Amanda Fritz, said, quote, "Eventually there will be due process. In the meantime, we need to make sure innocent people aren't blamed or victimized," end quote. That would be the Muslim population. So here's a kid. The whole thing, I guess you know about the story now. You know, here's a 19-year-old who the whole thing, everything, even up to and including the van that this 19-year-old was supposed to park near the gathering and ignite with a cell phone. And then the kid dialed the number, right? Well, there you go, Mike. There's your proof. He was a mass killer. All of it, every single bit of it, was set up by the FBI. Why Portland? Why Portland, Oregon? Well, it's a very liberal city, by and large, isn't it? That's what I've heard. I've not been to Portland. I know we have an affiliate who carries this program there. KPOJ? Is that what it is? And for that, we are extremely grateful. Why Portland? I mean, can anyone think of an idea other than just the idea of any mass gathering? I was in a mass gathering up in the North Georgia Mountains last, when was it? Sunday night? Saturday night? Saturday night. Yeah, Saturday night. In Blue Ridge, Georgia. Beautiful city in the Blue Ridge Mountains. Up near where Tennessee, North Carolina, and Georgia come together. Not far from there. Downtown Portland, so to speak. Had what they call Light Up Blue Ridge. I'm sorry, Downtown Blue Ridge. They have a thing called Light Up Blue Ridge. Kind of like what happened in Portland. Same thing, except to a much smaller degree. I think the population of Blue Ridge is probably on a good day, maybe 10,000, 8,000, 7, 6, 5. But it draws from the surrounding areas. A lot of little towns up there, Blairsville, Georgia, Morganton, Georgia, McKaysville, Georgia. All those little towns. Beautiful, beautiful part of the country. And so we went to downtown Blue Ridge on Saturday night. By we, I mean our family group. There are about 8 of us. And it was really cool. Down near the railroad tracks, they had a stage set up and had a rock band and a country band and a soul singer and some cloggers. Everybody has cloggers. Kind of like river dance, but a little bit different. And it was a lot of fun. It was colder than hell. It was about 28 degrees. And crowd of about, like I say, the crowd came from all around that area, that mountain area. Lots of small towns back in the hollows and mountain valleys. And they have, Blue Ridge has a slightly sophisticated population in comparison with some of the other towns in that area because of the influx of potters and artists and writers and, you know, those kind of folk. People trying to get away from Atlanta or Chattanooga or Greenville or whatever and get out in the mountains. And so we're standing in this huge crowd. It was a lot of fun. And thought crossed my mind, why would somebody try to blow up this crowd of about, and there's probably 6,000-7,000 people there. Why would somebody want to do that? You know, thinking about why would someone want to blow up a crowd in downtown Portland? Why Portland? And I couldn't come up with an answer. Now I have it. Thanks to Alice in Arkansas and the New York Times. In response to the thwarted plot, Mayor Sam Adams has floated the idea of cooperating more fully with federal law enforcement agencies now. Ooh, because 5 years ago, the Portland City Council passed an ordinance that put conditions on the city's continued participation in the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force out of concern for the civil liberties of people in Portland. Mayor Adams said he was now prepared to reconsider his opposition. Game, set, match. You know, it's easy if you really put your mind to it. And for the feds, for the police state, the American security state to operate, even in Portland, which is the reason the WikiLeaks release of all these documents is so important. So that it's kind of the death throes of empire, so that we can see exactly the kinds of lies, deception, disrespect, contempt that the governments, Democrat and Republican of the United States, have shown for the rest of the world. The chickens as, was it H. Rapp or was it Stokely? I think it was Stokely Carmichael. The chickens, as Stokely Carmichael said, are coming home to roost. Would you have guessed that a little collie weed could ever bring all of these vultures into being? What it feels like we're living in a police state. You broke the law, so accept your fate. They pull your car over and they beat you too. And this hour is sponsored by Marlo Hall. The entire hour wrote a very nice note to Kathy and Molly. Thanks, Marlo. 10 before the hour. Well, I hope that answers the question you had about why Portland, why Portland, Oregon? What is it about Portland that would inspire a 19-year-old kid to blow up his own city and wreak havoc? It's just getting crazy. How many? I mean, I don't mean to sound very, very, very stupid. I don't mean to sound like a right winger or a Republican. But how many of these scams are going to be run by the FBI? How many times? Whatever happened to the Miami Five or Seven? Remember them? They were going to blow up the Chicago. The Sears Tower or something, and the only thing they got out of it, they said the reason they did it is because they got new combat boots.
I mean, Micah, I could go out here right now and find 10 kids at the corner who are playing hooky from high school right around the corner and convince them to blow up anything for new Nikes. Those kids in Chicago were set up.
Well, they were in Miami. They were going to go to Chicago. It goes on and on and on. What about the group up in, where was it? In upstate New York? Was it Buffalo? Was it, whatever happens to these stories, what's the follow through? Why are they always, you know, like dark skinned and either Middle Eastern or African? Why never anyone who looks like Timothy McVeigh caught in a sting operation? And isn't it interesting that the only domestic terror operation successfully, if that's the right word, carried out in this country, the bombing of the Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City, was carried out by an American soldier, Caucasian, white guy, believer in the right-wing propaganda literature crap. But we don't see white people arrested, do we? We don't see white people rounded up, even though they're out there. I mean, you can't go to some of these sick right-wing websites without reading all kinds. Maybe the FBI has them under surveillance. Who knows? But reading all this crazy crap from these Caucasoid groups, you know, the knuckle-draggers who are talking about Zog and, you know, how the Turner Diaries were actually holy writ. And I mean, just on and on and on. But we never see that. You know, real plotting going on out there by Caucasoids. But all we ever see, some 19-year-old or 23-year-old or 18-year-old dark-skinned person with a name like Mahmoud or Muhammad or Islam or whatever. And he was caught. Caught doing what? He was plotting. He was going to blow up downtown Portland. You're kidding, really? Why? And then you kind of put two and two together and you come up with 64. You find out that the city of Portland 5 years ago said, you know, there is such a thing as constitutional rights, civil liberties, human rights, and, you know, join this FBI anti-joint terrorism task force 1984 Big Brother is watching you moments of hate thing is just a little bit much for us here in Portland. So, okay, we'll, you know, we're not going to sign up, but we'll keep our eyes open. No. In a national security state such as the one we live in, that's not how it works. You want to know how it works? Take a look at the classics. Take a look at the Soviet Union. Take a look at East Germany. Take a look at Germany pre-World War II. Take a look at North Korea. Take a look at any national security state where the leadership is totally paranoid, totally understanding of how to control your population, the evil that lurks among us. You know, the external evil is no longer sufficient. A long time ago, it wasn't sufficient. If you see something, say something. Loose lips sink ships. I mean, just on and on and on. We are in an endless war declared by the Bush crime family, invented by the Bush crime family, promoted by the Bush crime family. Now, granted, we were in an endless ideological war, but we are in an endless shooting war now where people actually die. Why Portland? Why Portland? Because Portland City Council had the absolute temerity to suggest that being part of the joint task force on keeping the bad guys at bay and prevent us all from being swept into a Muslim furnace, courtesy of the FBI and the CIA and the ABC and the DEF, that signing up for that might not be to the in the best interest of the U.S. Constitution. Well, by God, they learned their lesson now, right? See what happens, Portland? You see what happens when your city council 5 years ago says, hold on, hold on, hold on. See what happens? Huh? Your FBI is working tirelessly to protect you. And is your CIA. You don't believe it? Get online and take a look at what WikiLeaks just dumped all over the globe. Hallelujah. Hallelujah. And hallelujah. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Hear that?